This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, a speech by UN Secretary General Kofi Annan is tough on the U.S., and outgoing Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney wants Bush impeached. Joining us today from our New York bureau is Michael Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist, is at NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., and at member station WRNI in Providence, Rhode Island. Glenn Lowry, Professor of the Social Sciences and Professor of Economics at Brown University. So thanks, everyone, for being with us, and let's go straight to the Secretary General. After 10 years at the UN, Kofi Annan gave a final speech yesterday at the Truman Presidential Museum and Library in Minnesota. He offered five lessons he learned and criticized the Bush administration. So Kofi Annan has been a UN Secretary General for 10 years, and what do you think his legacy will be, Glenn?
Well, I think he's done a magnificent job. This is a man who won the Nobel Peace Prize. The principles that he's embodied in his 10 years at the United Nations, collective security, multilateralism, human rights, these are the principles on which an international order of peace are going to be eventually constructed. And his criticism of the Bush administration is not his alone. It's a criticism that's very broadly shared in the international community, and that has been borne out by the facts. He went to Independence, Missouri to symbolize the fact that Harry Truman, after World War II, was instrumental in trying to create an international community that could resolve disputes peacefully. This is what he stands for, and this is going to be his legacy.
I'm going to ask you, Laura, do you think that UN Secretary General Kofi Annan will be remembered as someone who led the UN wisely or who presided over a period in which the UN lost power?
Probably a little bit of both. I agree with Glenn's assessment of his tenure. He took the right positions on a lot of different issues. He ran into some personal scandals of his own along the way, but he governed the UN in probably what is the most difficult period in the UN's history, and certainly in the history of the world, especially in terms of the three major wars just that the United States was involved in, not to mention Sudan and Rwanda and all the other horrific things that have been happening around the world. And he kept his head high, and he did really, I think, sound the call. He was very critical of our conduct in the Iraq War, critical of the administration without naming names, because you didn't have to name the names. But he also sounded off on the issue of America's role and its increasing imperialist role in this world. And he wisely, I think, advised us that, you know, whether we're members of the United Nations or members of the world community, that we can't afford to put ourselves in a position of being arrogant as we have been in this war, and basically, you know, saying if you're not on our boat, we're going to leave without you, because in the end, that will destroy our credibility as it already has to a certain degree, and it will be very perilous for the world in general.
Laura, I'm actually going to play a little bit of Kofi Annan's final speech.
The U.S. has given the world an example of democracy in which everyone, including the most powerful, is subject to legal restraint. Its current moment of world supremacy gives it a priceless opportunity to entrench the same principles at the global level. As Harry Truman said, we all have to recognize, no matter how great our strength, that we must deny ourselves the license to do always as we please.
Michael, that speaks directly to what Laura was just talking about. The UN Secretary General basically is saying that the U.S. has been acting like a spoiled baby, if you break it down in plain language. Do you agree with his assessment?
I've read the speech. I've heard the speech. I've heard so many speeches from Kofi Annan after 10 years of lackluster leadership. You know, he may have received the Nobel Peace Prize, but the world is not at peace. The world is falling apart. Darfur, the Middle East, Lebanon, Sudan, it goes on and on and on. No more time to give you how the world is falling apart under his quote-unquote leadership. Look, this was Kofi Annan's swan song. It should have been his siren song. Suddenly, he's an expert on how the United Nations can function more effectively. Suddenly, he's an expert after 10 years of lackluster leadership. He discovers that Harry Truman... this was my idea of his finding his lecturing voice, his discovery of Harry Truman in an academic way of posturing. Maybe he's preparing himself for some sort of academic position at Columbia or Harvard. But I cannot believe after this guy, food for oil scandals and all this, all the examples of his ineptness, that suddenly he's supposed to be taken seriously. Well, Michael, I don't take him seriously.
Michael, that's right, the double Michael today. Let's give the guy a break here. Now, you remember, he is a diplomat.
You gave him a break.
He is a diplomat. If he had come out swinging like this a year or so ago, he would have been attacked and criticized for taking sides and for being obstructionist. This is the swan song, siren song, whatever you want to call it. This is the time for him to be able to speak frankly and come from a person. I think he does have a little bit of expertise on the world and has had a lot of experience here, and he's trying to bring that message.
So maybe he'll get a position at Columbia or Harvard. Okay.
Well, I don't care where he goes to work.
But he didn't accomplish much as UN Secretary General.
But I think the message that he's sending is one we need to hear.
All right, let's move along to another topic, which is related in a way. Cynthia McKinney, who was most recently in the news for, a scuffle with a Capitol Police officer.
Oh, Lord.
Michael's very disenchanted with this topic, in case you haven't heard.
No, I like this topic.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I can only imagine what Michael's about to say. So she basically gave the Bush administration a parting kiss off by introducing a bill to impeach the president. It doesn't have a snowball's chance of passing. And it's not just about President Bush. It's also considered a diss to the new Democratic leadership because Nancy Pelosi, the incoming speaker, has said no way, no how, no impeachment. Representative McKinney is a Democrat from Atlanta, lost her seat in the last election. I want to ask you guys what this means, but before I do, I want to make sure everyone listening knows who they're listening to. Michael Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist, Glenn Lowry, Professor of the Social Sciences and Professor of Economics at Brown University. Of course, this is NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Jadea. And Michael, why not you first?
Yeah, well, look, this is about Cynthia. She used to be a Congresswoman, McKinney. Not knowing how to make a graceful exit. This is just more grandstanding on her part. Just like, her protest at the Capitol Police officer didn't know who she was if she was a congressman because she didn't wear her pin and everybody in the world should know who she is. Well, everybody doesn't know who she is. So now she's talking about impeachment. After how many years in Congress? By the way, can she spell President Cheney? This is just grandstanding. Bush was impeached. He was impeached in the November 2006 election, just like she was impeached by the people in her district who decided they're tired of her grandstanding. She's got to go. Now, Bush will go in 2 years, and that's it, period.
All
learn,
right,
learn, grow up.
Michael, you think she'll get a position in Columbia?
Maybe Howard, not Harvard.
Uh-oh, we're going to get some angry emails.
Letters, we get letters.
Yep. So Laura, what do you make of this in terms of the Democratic Party? I mean, there are certain people in Congress, including Barbara Lee from California, Lynn Woolsey also from California, various people who have been really advocating for a stronger stance within the party against the war and in opposition to the president, have not necessarily gone so far as Cynthia McKinney, but does this bring up a rift between Democrats who may feel, you know what, the party's soft, hasn't really gone for the jugular, and Democrats who say, hey, we won, let's not mess this up?
Oh, sure, there's a rift, but the leadership, namely one Nancy Pelosi, is not going to allow that. She's not going to allow this rift to divert her. I think that the Democrats in a position where they have to exercise some restraint. This impeachment movement is just not going to go anywhere, as you mentioned earlier. It's divisive. It's a real time waster. And I think, frankly, Farai, you said earlier that Cynthia McKinney is sort of going against the grain of some of the leaders in her party. I think that she's gone against the grain of leadership in her party for a long time, and that's why they're probably saying don't let the door hit you on the way out when she leaves office. I think that what she does represent, though, is her departure represents an opportunity for the Congressional Black Caucus, of which she was a member, to step up and not necessarily take take a stronger position on Iraq, because I think they've already been pretty strong on Iraq, but to take a leadership role and to get some stuff done. Cynthia McKinney's best known for scuffling with the cops on Capitol Hill. We have another black congressman who's been indicted for federal crimes. We need to get beyond that kind of attention and get some stuff done. And I think that the Congressional Black Caucus, without folks like McKinney, can be far more effective.
Glenn?
Yeah, I agree with my colleagues on 2 points. I mean, no brief for Cynthia McKinney. Bye. And also the fact that impeachment's a very bad idea and it's not going to happen. I'll just note, it's ironic that in this country a president can be impeached for lying about a sex act, but not for lying about a war and then mismanaging it. But never mind. Myers is right to say that the voters have spoken and that Bush was already repudiated in 2006. I'll just note also that he's going to be impeached by history.
Yes.
History is going to be a very harsh critic. What is the legacy of the Bush presidency? I don't think there's anything positive to point to. This is the worst American president since Warren G. Harding, and everybody knows it.
Well, you know, there have been a lot of studies, you know, or surveys of historians saying President Bush could be considered the worst president ever in history. But, Glenn, what did Harding do? I have not been brushing up on Warren Harding.
It's what he didn't do, together with the Teapot Dome scandal that raged under his administration. I mean, he was a good-looking Ohio governor that got himself elected president but then was a non-entity after getting in there, and worse. It's a harsh judgment. I said the worst sense, so I don't say Bush was worse than Harding. But you're hard-pressed to name another American president in this century who screwed it up as badly as has done George W. Bush.
We've had an overall general lowering of standards, by the way, and here I agree with Glenn. George Bush is really, really, really a bad president, inept and incompetent, and just a bad, bad president in all ways. But the point is that we're living in a world now where they regard Ronald Reagan, believe it or not, as one of the best presidents of the United States. We've lowered our standards and our expectations of excellence. It's just too chilling and too bad.
You know, Farai, we started out this conversation talking about Cynthia McKinney and Congress, and I think that that's a point that we don't want to let go. And there was just a new CBS poll out that showed that Bush had the lowest popularity rate in terms of his handling of the war on Iraq than he's had in the history of the war. It's at 21%. But there was a USA Today poll that came out today that American citizens giving congressional leaders a 14% mark. In other words, only 14% of those surveyed thought that our congressional leaders were leading us with ethics and high standards. So we are sort of in Congress is in the same boat as Bush, but this is also an opportunity for them to step up. Bush is a lame duck now. There's not much more he can do. You're right. He's pretty much an abject failure. It's an opportunity now for our congressional leaders to try to get us out of this mess.
All right. Well, I'm sure we'll have some folks writing in again on that. I'll be sure to give you the information to send to our letters department.
Just don't give them my email address.
I won't. But we have just a couple minutes left, and I wanted to bring up one more topic. New York City reached an agreement in 6 states to help stop illegal gun sales. Dealers in New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Georgia, and Virginia will allow court-appointed officials to monitor the way they prevent illegal gun sales, because a lot of people cycle guns through New York City. And, Michael, do you think this is going to make a difference?
No.
Explain.
You know, this is Bloomberg, Bloomberg's campaign of guns and butter. You know, he's banned trans fats now, and he's trying to use litigation to, quote-unquote, ban illegal guns in New York City. Come on. Not one other city has followed New York's example. What Bloomberg has done is brought a lawsuit or lawsuits, and lawsuits are very costly. And of course, these small gun shops are going to fold. They're going to try and sell over and get government to monitor their actions and their missteps and their miscues and their mistakes. But where's the federal government? This is the federal government's role when they talk about state-to-state commerce or interstate commerce. So, Bloomberg is, maybe he's trying to raise his national profile. Probably he's trying to get a job at NYU after he leaves office.
He's already a billionaire. He don't need a job.
He needs a job. Otherwise, he wouldn't be mayor.
Hey, watch out.
I don't know about that.
Teaching in the Ivy League is a perfectly respectable profession, I have to
say. Some people, like you, yeah, but not
some of us
not
aspire to that.
Just reputable.
with politics.
Indeed. Some of us aspire to that. Glenn, what do you think of the tactic of...
I think Michael's probably right. It's probably not going to make that much difference on the ground. I don't know what Bloomberg's motives are. I do know that, you know, the right to bear arms has, in a way, become the right to arm bears. Mm-hmm. Guns are a serious, serious problem. It's a federal problem, and the politics of it, the National Rifle Association, et cetera, has made it very difficult to do anything about it. But I think some creative use of the instruments of court or lawsuit or whatever shouldn't be gainsaid. I mean, you know, look at what we did with tobacco. I think we had a significant impact on for the better on public health through various strategies to try to get at the tobacco companies. And I think things have to be done about guns, the NRA notwithstanding, because it's a serious problem in our society.
Laura, very briefly.
I agree 100%. Innovative, creative, necessary. Whatever we can do at state, federal, and local levels to get more guns off the streets, we have to do.
We've been talking to Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist, Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, and Glenn Lowry, professor of the social sciences and professor of economics at Brown University. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right. So as always, if you'd like to comment on any of the topics you've heard on the roundtable, if you're happy, if you're sad, let us know. Call us at 202-408-3330. That's 202-408-3330. Or you can send us an email. Just log on to npr.org and click on Contact Us. And please be sure to tell us where you're writing from and how to pronounce your name.